everyone can hear me? My name is Ivy Terrell, as he said. So I'm going to be speaking to y'all today about a project that we did here in the city of New Orleans. And we are going to be looking at parental monitoring and how that impacts arrest and incarceration in a population of young African-American males. I have nothing to disclose. So I wanted to provide y'all with a snapshot of the incarceration situation here in the state of Louisiana. Obviously, this conference attracts people from all over the country and the world, and so y'all may not all be familiar with the situation here in our state. Currently, Louisiana has the highest per capita incarceration rate in the world. One in 86 residents is currently incarcerated, and that would be both in jail and prison. Here in the city of New Orleans, this epidemic is particularly widespread, particularly also among African-American and black populations. One in 14 young black men of all ages here in the city is currently incarcerated, and one out of seven is currently involved in the justice system in some way. Okay, and so that would be actively on probation, on parole, or incarcerated in jail or prison. There's also quite a marked disparity within the prison population compared to our state population. The state population ratio is 1-2 black to white. However, the prison population ratio, as you see, is quite different, with a ratio of 5-1. Incarceration has been linked to negative health and negative social outcomes, as I'm sure many of y'all are familiar with, particularly among incarcerated youth. As you can see, they're 20-30% less likely to be employed after release. And so in that situation, it may lend themselves to perhaps going back to the activities that they got incarcerated, you know, because of in the first place, because it's harder for them to find employment. Recently released inmates have a risk of dying, particularly in the first 2 weeks to 1 month after release from prison, that is up to 12 times higher than that of the general population. So clearly that's a very vulnerable period. And then of course recidivism is a huge deal. Two-thirds of formerly incarcerated do return to prison at some point. So this cycle continues. And as this cycle continues, these health and social outcomes often get worse each time somebody comes out or goes into prison. So our project, what we did, so we did a randomized control trial here in the city of New Orleans. It was actually a sexual health intervention that we were evaluating. It was called Focus on the Future. It's developed by Dr. Richard Crosby, who works for the University of Kentucky. It's actually a sexual health, it's a one-on-one intervention that focuses on increased empowerment, knowledge, and specifically around condom use. We worked solely with young black men, ages 15 to 23. We recruited them from publicly funded STI clinics here in the city of New Orleans. And we enrolled 700 young men in this project total. Along with testing them for baseline and six-month STDs, including chlamydia and gonorrhea, we also asked all of our participants to complete an audio computer-assisted survey at 3 points in time. The survey was fairly long and looked at a bunch of different things, but particularly we looked at current living situation, whether the participant had any arrest or incarceration history. We also, of course, gathered general demographics, and then, since it was a sexual health study, obviously we looked at sexual behaviors and sexual risk factors. So, for our supplemental analysis, which is what this is we're looking at today, we took out the subset of participants in the project who indicated that they were currently living at home with at least one parent or guardian present in the house. We asked those individuals, and it was 324 of our 700 men, so approximately 55-56%, to complete a supplemental scale. This scale was designed to assess the monitoring or how much involvement that the primary caretaker would have with the participant in their daily life. We also looked at, for this analysis, the arrest and incarceration. It was by self-report, as was everything in this project. And we essentially, for coding for that, we just said ever versus never. The question was phrased, have you ever been arrested? Yes, no. Have you ever been incarcerated? Yes, no. And that's how it was coded. So real simple. We also felt like it was very important for this analysis to look at neighborhood level variables. We particularly looked at drug crime and property crime. And we essentially asked if the participant had witnessed or been part of or had any exposure to either drug dealing, selling, using, anything of that nature, or break-ins, home invasions, anything of that sort in the past 6 months. So whether they'd witnessed that or seen that or been a part of that or experienced that. All right, so just to give you all a little bit more detail on the scale, because it was something that we really spent some time developing, and we feel like, you know, it may be useful for other people to use as well in future interventions. So essentially we just scored it on a 5-to-1 scale. So 5 is strongly agree, 1 would be strongly disagree. So as I said, the objective was to look at how much daily kind of monitoring or permission giving or caretaking that provider was involved in the participant. So in some situations, we had to reverse code when we did the analysis. For example, the third question here, this person lets you go anywhere you want without asking. So we always wanted to make sure when we were doing the scoring that 5 was going to be associated with the highest level of monitoring and 1 was going to be associated with the lowest level of monitoring. So in that example, a 1 would be a strongly disagree, so that's actually, something that we would reverse, and so we'd give that a 5, and we'd give the other one a 1, which would be agree, and that's saying that there's no monitoring in that situation. So this was a 9-item scale. Those were the first 3. Before you go out, you tell this person when you'll be back. We talked about checking in before going out. Communication, mostly our teens were using text messaging to communicate with adults. And peers as well, but adults in this situation. We also wanted to talk about involvement, as I said, in daily life. So essentially knowing the peer group, knowing what's going on with the participant, and how much permission that they were giving for them to go out and do things. Okay, so our analysis. The scale did prove to be highly reliable. The Kornbach alpha was 0.8, and it did meet the assumption of normality, so we do feel it's a fairly valid scale. As I explained, we assigned everything a numerical value. We did reverse code when necessary. Scoring, we just added everyone's score up. The higher scores would indicate a greater level of parental monitoring. As you can see, the mean is 29, and the response range was fairly wide. Essentially, the lowest end would be people who answered a 1 for 8 of the 9 items and a 2 for 1 of them. That's the low end. And then the high end would be somebody who answered 5 or the highest level for each of the 9 items included in the scale. So here's our demographics of our subset. And again, as I mentioned, 324 young men was about 55% of our total study sample. Our mean age was about 19. Standard deviation, you can see, is fairly large. It's a little bit younger than the mean age in our full study, which was closer to 20, 21-ish. This is a relatively disadvantaged population when it comes to income, 88% reporting less than $1,000 a month. Only 40% currently have a GED or a high school, have graduated from high school. We did have a fairly large percentage of this population, it's not in the table, but who were currently enrolled in school, and most of those would be high school. We did have a fairly risky population in terms of sexual health, particularly with a history of a chlamydia or gonorrhea diagnosis. 88% of them identified as heterosexual, only 7 as homosexual, and our mean number of lifetime sex partners was 10, which I will mention, and it's not necessarily relevant, but it is interesting that this is actually significantly lower than our mean for the full study, which was closer to 20. So this is maybe having less partner than that. All right, so what did we find? Essentially, we found that there was a significant difference in the amount of parental monitoring for the study participants who indicated that they did have a arrest history and for the group of study participants that indicated that they did have an incarceration history, right? So as you can see, we do have significant p-values there. The higher parental monitoring scores are clearly there and visible for those who have never been arrested or incarcerated compared to the ones who have ever. So, It's not a huge difference, but as you can, if you remember, the mean was 29. So again, it's still above the mean as well. So that is important to note. Another thing that we did find important and wanted to mention is that there was absolutely no significant difference at all between the neighborhood level variables that we looked at. And so that was the drug crime and property crime things that we assessed to kind of, you know, account for, you know, whether you live in a very risky neighborhood, you may be more likely to be exposed to these things and then, you know, be arrested or incarcerated yourself. So we did not find any significant difference at all between those who had arrest or incarceration history and those who did not in terms of the neighborhood level variables. Also, it is important to mention that our incarceration rates are consistent, if not actually higher, than our rates for the city. Not within this subset, but the full study population, 43% of our study population indicated that they had been incarcerated at some time. Okay, so that's a significant percentage, kind of holding with the New Orleans rates. Clearly, all studies have limitations, so here are ours. We did use a convenient sample. I mean, our project was testing a sexual health intervention, so we recruited solely from participants who, or young men who presented at an STD clinic for testing. So, you know, not everyone's going to do that. Of course, you know, did use self-report. Everything was done on a computer, and we do feel like there's, you know, it's fairly reliable just based on the numbers. I mean, 43% of our population did say that they've been arrested or incarcerated. So it's a substantial number. So we feel like it's fairly valid. Our small n, because we only did this as a supplemental analysis, not all of our participants were included. And then, of course, as I mentioned before, our rates that were actually really, really high. So not every population, you know, has incarceration rates that are this big. And so for that you know, reason, it may not be generalizable to those populations. But for urban populations such as ours in New Orleans, it very well may be. All right, so based on all that, we really feel like it's important to note this association. Okay, so, you know, the higher levels of parental monitoring were, we found, associated with the decreased likelihood of past arrest or incarceration. It's important to know here that this was a retrospective study, right? So we didn't measure this going forward, we just looked going back, right? So we're not necessarily saying that it's, you know, if you have a parent who's really involved and, you know, knows where you are at every point in time, that's going to prevent you from getting arrested, but, you know, we did see that it was associated with those who had a less likelihood of that happening to them in the past. So that's important. Due to that, you know, we feel like it's very important to look at this. You know, this is a really interesting outcome that we got. It wasn't necessarily one that we expected. It wasn't really what we set out to measure. But, you know, we did find it, and we feel like it was very relevant to this particular population. You know, future programming that looks at not only the youth themselves, but also does parenting or caretaking or, you know, parent empowerment, parent education, anything of that support, you know, any kind of support or anything like that of the primary parent or guardian could actually make a big, you know, difference in the life of the youth themselves. And so for that, we obviously are recommending additional prospective studies, you know, examining this association. Finally, this study was funded by a grant, it's an R01, and I'd also like to thank Dr. Ryan Pasternak, my amazing supervisor and mentor, great person standing right there, and then Mercedes Proctor, my coworker, who's heard this presentation about 30,000 times. All right, thank you.
We have time for like one or two questions.
Okay.
Maybe we just do it like that, maybe a couple of questions.
Yeah, sure. The scale was, I believe, yeah. I mean, the Dr. Crosby and some of our co-investigators, Laura Salazar and Ralph DiClemente, have used some of these scales before on other research projects, but they are ones that they did develop. It wasn't solely developed for this project, but it is a consistent scale that they've used on several of their surveys.
Yeah, right?
Yes, it's a 9-item scale. Yeah.
And that operationalized
Yes. Absolutely, yeah. No, absolutely not. I mean, I think that one thing that, you know, we didn't include here, and that becomes more and more of an issue as, you know, kind of we get into the future and technology and all that stuff, obviously there's a whole level of parental monitoring of your internet activities or, you know, parental monitoring of your cell phone or, you know, things like that. You know, how much you know about people's social networks that they're engaging with through electronic, through media, stuff like that. And that wasn't reflected really in this at all. So that's something that we certainly would probably want to include in the future. This really just looked at mostly communication, and then it also looked at permissiveness. So, you know, the amount of permission asking and giving that there was between the caretaker and the participant. And then we also looked at how much involvement that the parent had in the peer groups, because we did feel like, you know, that's obviously something important, and higher level of monitoring, they may be more connected with the peer group that the youth is hanging out with. But absolutely not. It's not a fully, you know, doesn't cover everything. There's a lot of levels of monitoring.
And this may be, yeah, the last quick question, because I think we're
okay, sorry.
Sorry. Last one.
Sorry.
Was there a multivariate analysis done up to?
There was. And I don't necessarily have that in front of me, but we did. And we did find it still to be significant. You know, we did kind of tease out a lot of the, you know, a lot of the factors that could have been associated with. And it was still significant across that. And there were some other significant findings that we found, too, but I'm not going to get into it right now. But, so, yeah. All right. Thank you.